You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey, I'm Kay Hanley from Letters to Cleo, and you are listening to The Flopcast.
Live from Chicken Town, this is The Flopcast, episode 499.
Featuring Boozy Cornflake.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, Kevin.
What's going on over there? You introduced yourself rather unusually. This is Boozy Cornflake.
Boozy Cornflake.
What are you doing over there? What's going on?
I'm getting ready to celebrate episode 500 of the Flopcast, and I started a week early.
Started a week early. Okay. What do you have over there? Just like
just a little something-something in my coffee. Well, several somethings. I made myself an espresso martini. And because it's inconvenient to make it as a single serving, I made a double serving.
All right. Well, why not?
And it is almost gone. So, hi.
Oh. Oh, my. Okay. You've been pre-gaming.
Is that what the kids are calling it these days?
Yeah. Taking a cue from our sister podcast, but first let's talk nerdy. That's their move.
I'll have to whip them up some espresso martinis sometime.
Yeah. They usually stick with just like the cans of hard seltzer. You've gotten all fancy over there. Well, I've just got my regular old coffee over here.
Well, your regular old coffee is delicious, and I miss it. But I've got the next best thing.
Yeah, you're doing just fine.
Oh, I'm doing better than fine.
All right. Well, let's just see what happens then. How about a special boozy edition of National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
Well, the only way that this National Whatever Day is going to be any fun, Kevin, is if there's booze involved, because December 4th is National Sock Day.
Weird.
And who wouldn't love to spend a segment of a program talking about socks? I mean, I personally love socks.
Yep.
I don't know how you feel about socks. I don't think we've ever discussed it.
Very, very neutral.
You're neutral on socks.
I give the subject zero thought.
I have had sock collections since I was little. I love a snazzy pair of socks.
A collection. Okay.
Bright, crazy colors. The ones with the little grippies on the bottom so I don't go sailing across the hardwood floor.
I know you're a fan of the sock puppet also.
Oh, yeah. I could not have gotten through the late 90s without my Syphilin Ollie on MTV.
Right.
I do love a good sock puppet. So National Sock Day is the day for me. And if you are not happy that we are discussing socks in this segment, blame celebrities because they don't have any milestone birthdays this week. We would have pretty much been stuck talking about Britney Spears or Peter Buck from REM. So that's why.
And they are both, the two of them, famously very anti-sock.
Right. I hate that.
Yeah, that concept album that they did together.
Their anti-sock stance is so pretentious.
Well, you're going the other way. You're very pro-sock, I take it.
And I'm wondering if you find this strange at all, Kevin, because for as long as you've known me, I've gone barefoot as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, that's a good point. We had to put one of those signs up on the front door at the studio eventually, like they have at convenience stores, because you were just showing up like a hillbilly. It was the straw hat, the overalls.
Hippie cornflake.
Zero footwear.
So happy sock day, people.
Well, sure. Enjoy. Let's see. Meanwhile, what do I have for you? I've got concert reports.
Really? What have you been up to?
I've been out to concerts. Now, obviously, I've been to very few concerts this year. But a couple of weekends ago, I went to a very odd little show, and this was something, we got tickets for this like 2 years ago. This is one of those pre-pandemic ticket purchases where the show got postponed 18 times, and it finally happened. We went to see Max Weinberg.
As in Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
This is Bruce's drummer, yeah. But I know Max even better, though, as a fan of Conan O'Brien, because Max was the band leader on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. And this was Max Weinberg's Jukebox. It's Max and his band, and there's a big screen behind the stage. Before the show starts, there's just a list of songs scrolling on the screen. And it's about 50, 60 songs are scrolling by.
Ooh.
And it's all like classic rock songs. And the audience has index cards, and you just write down your requests. There's a big bucket sitting on the stage in the front, and people are just scribbling out their cards, dropping them in the bucket.
Like a menu.
You know, the show starts. Max comes out, picks up the bucket, sticks it behind his drum kit, and he is just fishing cards out of the bucket all night and just playing whatever people requested.
That is superb.
Yeah, kind of a fun concept for a show.
Makes it easy. He doesn't have to think about a set list beforehand.
The audience makes the set list every night, yeah. Only two Springsteen songs were on the list, but they both got played. That was Pink Cadillac and Glory Days. The big finale of the show was Glory Days.
Love it.
The mayor of Chickentown was with me, and Max did play her request. The mayor selected Surrender by Cheap Trick.
Oh, very nice. Were there any songs on there that really surprised you?
Well, the biggest surprise is that Max completely ignored all my requests. What I did was I grabbed about 75 index cards, mm-hmm. and I just wrote a different Air Supply song on each one of them.
Did you at least try to change up the handwriting, or would he have known they were all from you?
Yes, I used completely different handwriting on every card. In fact, I was cutting letters out of a magazine and taping them down on the card so they couldn't trace them back to me, you know, like a ransom note.
Yeah, you get bonus points for being super creepy on that.
Yeah, I showed up 11 hours early because it took me so long to get all my cards filled out. Anyway, no Air Supply. Max ignored all my requests for Air Supply all night, and he got angrier over the course of the night as well as he kept, you know, crumpling up index cards and tossing them behind him.
It's hard to imagine somebody getting angry at Air Supply, but I guess in that context, I can see it.
I finally figured out a way to make it happen. In Lexington, Massachusetts. This was in Lexington. You know Lexington.
Yeah, I do know Lexington really well.
From the Revolutionary War and whatnot.
Yes, and the ride of Paul Revere.
We know Lexington all too well. Anyway, that was Max Weinberg's Jukebox, a weird little show that had been delayed for the past 18 months or so, finally happened. And just a few days ago, it's Letters to Cleo, the big homecoming concerts from Letters to Cleo.
I've been to this with you.
You and I went to see Cleo 2-3 years ago, because I'm there every year.
Yeah, there's no holding you back. Well, Kay Hanley is your favorite singer.
I love Kay Hanley. Yes, Letters to Cleo frontwoman Kay Hanley is my favorite singer.
Kay Hanley can do no wrong.
We love Kay, and we love the whole band, of course. Legendary Boston alt-rock from the 90s, Letters to Cleo, just the best. So yeah, of course I went back. Back I go to the paradise. Everybody is vaccinated, you know, checking their vaccine cards at the door. I've got my mask on. I've got my other mask on. I'm double masked.
Good stuff.
I had a V66 mask on.
I didn't even know you had a V66 mask.
I have a V66 mask, yes.
That is so classy.
I got it special, you know, for the pandemic. So very stylish. Of course, now the show starts, and Cleo always has the best opening bands. You know, they've had the Blake Babies. I think American Hi-Fi was the band when you came with me.
Yeah, they were really good. I love them.
Speedy Ortiz was the band last time they came. Anyway, this the opening band was a band I'd never heard of. They're called Charlie Bliss. And Charlie is not a guy's name. That's just the name of the band is Charlie Bliss, and it's C-H-A-R-L-Y, Charlie Bliss. This is a really super fun, like, power pop band. A lady named Eva is the singer. Her brother is on the drums. The guitarist, I just looked this up today. The guitarist, a guy named Spencer, he was a voice actor when he was a kid.
Oh, really?
And he was the voice of Dash, the kid in the first Incredibles movie.
Wow.
Isn't that weird? I just learned that today.
Yeah.
And they were so super fun, Charlie Bliss. So I got their record that night, and I certainly recommend them. Letters to Cleo, always fantastic, of course, you know, playing all the classic Cleo songs, plus a new one. They've been working on some new music.
Ooh, I did not know there was a new Letters to Cleo album potentially on the horizon. That kind of makes my day.
Yeah, and again, I think they've been working on some new stuff for quite a while, but everything got, you know, way delayed over the last couple of years, of course, but hopefully that'll happen sometime soon. Now, they get to the encore. They bring Charlie Bliss back out on stage. And actually, during the Charlie Bliss set, Eva had mentioned that when she and her brother were younger, they used to sing all the songs from Josie and the Pussycats all the time.
Good choice.
Because remember, the movie, Josie and the Pussycats, the 2001 movie, Kay Hanley from Letters to Cleo, was the voice, the singing voice of Josie.
Yes.
They bring Charlie Bliss out and start playing Josie and the Pussycats songs. And that's something I had never seen Letters to Cleo do, you know, because those were not Cleo songs. Those were, that was just Kay as the voice of Josie. But this was Letters to Cleo and Charlie Bliss combined. And they did two Josie and the Pussycats songs. They did Three Small Words and they did Pretend to Be Nice.
Cool.
Which was, for a Cleo and a Josie and the Pussycats geek like me, very, very exciting. Although nobody was more excited than the girl from Charlie Bliss. Eva was going out of her mind, just hopping around, having the greatest time of her life, I think. She was so excited to be doing Josie songs with Cleo. So anyway, yeah, crazy fun Josie and the Pussycats finale to the concert.
Very nice.
Yeah. So
nice touch.
That was my latest goofy concert-going experience. I've got one more show coming up in just a few days as we record. Then I'm done. Then I go back into hiding. That's the plan. But there's no hiding from the year 1971, because we have some more cartoon talk to take care of, Cornflake.
I am looking forward to this.
So we started this a few weeks ago, before our flop fight. We were talking Saturday morning cartoons. We did this a few times last year. We do like a deep dive into a Saturday morning cartoon lineup from the past. So a few weeks ago, we went back 50 years to the year 1971. And last time we looked at the CBS Saturday morning lineup. Today, we're switching networks. We're changing the channel to NBC. It's a goofy lineup.
I would 100% agree with that.
Yeah. So you and I have both been reviewing these cartoons to get ready to discuss them tonight. And we start at 8 o'clock with a cartoon that I don't think I'd ever seen before. 8 a.m., Dr. Doolittle.
I didn't know this was a cartoon. I'm familiar with the films.
Yeah, I was vaguely aware that there was a cartoon, and I don't think I ever saw it. This Dr. Doolittle cartoon had aired the previous season. I think it was just all in reruns at this point. But this was DePatie Freleng studio. And yeah, this was Dr. Doolittle as a Saturday morning cartoon. And it was pretty goofy.
Yeah, I'll say. I checked it out earlier because I knew we were going to be talking about this lineup. And I got the theme song for this show. And I am enamored, Kevin. Cursing in Fluent Kangaroo. So clever.
Yeah. And that was, I knew the song. I remember that song from the movie. I must have seen the movie when I was a kid. And I think there have been more recent movies as well, although I did not see those. So you've got Dr. Doolittle and a kid, a younger guy, and they're on a ship sailing around.
That seemed to be a thing in the early 70s. There seemed to be a lot of nautical stuff going on.
Everybody was sailing around in the early 70s, but Dr. Doolittle has his crew of just goofy animals, many of which were voiced by Don Messick, so that's good.
Of course.
You know, voice of Scooby-Doo and a billion other things. Lenny Weinrib did a bunch of the voices as well. That's H.R. Puffin stuff and Time for Timer. The two-headed llama I loved.
That is so weird.
Up in the crow's nest of the ship is a two-headed llama voiced by Don Messick.
Any ship that does not have a two-headed llama up in the crow's nest is missing out.
Don did both voices, both heads of the llama.
That's excellent. So I guess Don Messick spent a lot of time arguing with himself.
Yes, always did. But there was a monkey, there was a duck, all kinds of wacky animals. They were doing battle with pirates every episode. It's this wacky band of pirates, and many of them were ethnic stereotypes, which I don't think would play very well today.
That would not fly today, no.
And then the craziest part was the grasshoppers. There's a rock band. And I think this was in every episode, a grasshopper rock band would do a song. And it was like crazy, goofy, hippie.
Psychedelic rock? Or?
Yeah, this was like early 70s hippie psychedelic rock band of cartoon grasshoppers.
I love that.
And one of them was like a girl grasshopper with blonde hair, which really freaked me out.
That's a real beauty right there.
Yes. So very, very strange, goofy cartoon. It looked good. It was fun. you know, setting aside the problematic pirates, this was a fun show. I like this.
All the most gorgeous grasshoppers have golden blonde locks. That's just fact.
That's the takeaway from Dr. Doolittle. 8:30, we move on to the Woody Woodpecker Show.
Now, the Woody Woodpecker Show in one form or another has been enduring over the years.
Oh, yeah. Woody goes way, way back a few decades earlier than this. And just poking around YouTube, I couldn't find any clips of this era of Woody Woodpecker as a TV show, because there have been so many newer versions since then. And those are the ones that seem to be clogging up my YouTube searches. But the show, anyway, it was, I think, largely just showing the old theatrical cartoons, you know, because Woody Woodpecker, yeah, just like the old Bugs Bunny cartoons and Disney and all that stuff, it was all, you know, theatrical shorts. And then the TV version was largely just showing those old Woody cartoons. So this would have been Woody Woodpecker and I assume some Andy Panda and Chilly Willy, the penguin.
I loved Chilly Willy.
I don't remember watching much Woody Woodpecker on Saturday mornings. To me, that was more like a weekday morning show.
Yeah, if you were finished getting ready for school and you were going to just plop down in front of the television and you had to get up any minute to catch the bus anyway. But yeah, I wouldn't seek out Woody Woodpecker myself. I did not get the appeal.
Yeah, some like UHF channel would always be showing the old Woody Woodpecker shows just during the week. But
it's a bird pecking at a tree.
Yeah, what more do you want? Why do you ask so much of Woody Woodpecker? What do you expect him to do? It's a woodpecker. A rather annoying woodpecker at that. You're like up in the woods in the middle of nowhere. Do you hear woodpeckers around you?
Oh, you betcha.
Oh, nice. I do enjoy hearing an actual woodpecker out in the wild.
Yeah, a real woodpecker is very different from a Woody Woodpecker.
The cartoon was not a very realistic depiction of the woodpecker. I would agree with that. Let's move along to 9 o'clock. Now we've got, this is an old favorite of mine, although again, I knew this as an afternoon show on some UHF channel, but here it is on Saturday morning, Deputy Dog.
You were a Deputy Dog fan?
When I was a little kid, I mean.
little?
Yeah, I don't think the show holds up terribly well, but yeah, when I was a little kid, I was into Deputy Dog. And that's, of course, D-A-W-G, Deputy Dog, because this is
with a drawl.
A southern dog with, yes, a serious, goofy accent. This was Terry Toons, which was the studio that did Mighty Mouse and Heckle and Jekyll. They also did Deputy Dog. I think Deputy Dog started in the early 60s, I believe, and I think it was just all reruns at this point. But it's a dog with a hat and the vest and the deputy's badge.
You know I love a good dog.
And he would just be chasing a gopher and a muskrat around.
Like you do if you're a dog who's also a deputy.
It was that weird little gopher and then the muskrat, who he called Musky. And they were kind of friends. Like, they'd all hang out, but then he'd also get angry with them. They'd try to steal eggs out of the hen house. They were always running around, getting into trouble. I think this was when I first learned of the existence of an animal called a muskrat. I'd never heard of a muskrat until Musky, the muskrat. Then years later, I worked with a muskrat.
What?
I used to work for my town's park and recreation department.
Ah.
I was like Nick Offerman. But I was just out, I'd be out in this park all day, you know, taking care of park stuff. And there was a little pond in the park, and a muskrat lived there. I'd see it swimming around, and then it had like a little hole up on the bank of the pond. So I'd see it swim across the pond and then climb up the bank and then disappear down its disgusting muskrat hole.
Aww, you had your own friend Musky.
And I felt like we were on an equal level in the park. It just felt like a co-worker, you know, like the two of us would clock in and do our own thing there in the park every day. I didn't feel superior or inferior to the muskrat. We were peers.
Contemporaries.
We weren't good friends. We didn't hang out. I haven't seen it since. It's one of those things where, oh, we get along fine, you know, for the work day. But then,
right,
you know, you think you're going to keep in touch, but you never do. Never saw that muskrat again. That thing's probably running the whole park and recreation department by this time. It climbed the ladder. Whereas I couldn't hack it. I had to get out of the business.
They still remember you fondly there, Kevin.
I couldn't keep up with
the muskrat.
The workload of the muskrat. Yeah. And so I had to just kind of fall into podcasting instead. Well, Deputy Dog, it was nice to watch a little Deputy Dog again, because I watched some Deputy Dog to get ready for the show, and I had not seen a Deputy Dog cartoon in decades. So that was fun to revisit. At 9:30, we have the new Pink Panther show.
Now you're getting into cornflake territory.
Yes. You're a Pink Panther fan?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And I think I have the syndication and reruns on TBS to thank for that back through the 90s. Because not only would they have the Pink Panther show, I loved that jazz song by Henry Mancini there.
Sure.
And the other little cartoons embedded in the Pink Panther show, such as Ant and the Aardvark.
Yeah, and I think this iteration of the Pink Panther show especially featured Ant and the Aardvark.
And I just forever thought that the Pink Panther format, it was just so clever and a little bit on the absurd side. And you didn't need a whole lot of dialogue to get the humor across. But then Ant and the Aardvark would come on. And I loved the voice of John Biner. And I knew John Biner was the voice of the Aardvark, but he was imitating someone, right?
Yeah, John Biner, who was a comedian and impressionist, voiced the Aardvark in the style of Jackie Mason.
Hey, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, another old comedy dude who I knew Jackie Mason best from The Jerk. He was the guy that ran the gas station where Steve Martin worked in The Jerk.
The way he talked just had me cracked up every time I saw it. So he was a big blue aardvark.
Yeah.
And he was always having these interactions. And his name was just Aardvark. And he was always having these interactions with Ant, who is also voiced by John Biner.
This guy did both voices, yes.
He did. And Ant was kind of sarcastic and easily annoyed. And I think was trying to sound like Dean Martin, was it?
Yeah, yeah. The Ant's voice was just supposed to be like the cool, laid-back Dean Martin kind of voice. Those are fun cartoons.
They really are.
At one point, like in the mid-80s, some local Boston UHF channel started showing Pink Panther cartoons every night at like 11 o'clock at night one summer. I spent a summer watching late-night Pink Panther cartoons.
I would have loved that.
Yeah, that's when I really got into these things, was back then. And it was Pink Panther and The Inspector, Mr. Jaws, which was a shark cartoon, and Ant and the Aardvark, all that stuff.
Loved it all. And then I heard there was going to be a Pink Panther reboot. And since I was a mega fan of Pink Panther and had watched all the episodes at least 3 or 4 times, I was so excited until I heard that the Pink Panther was going to have a voice.
Yeah, they did some later ones where he talked, and that never worked for me.
I couldn't even bring myself to watch it, and I was a mega fan of Pink Panther as a kid.
Yeah, at some point in the Saturday morning cartoons, they did Pink Panther and Sons, where they were like little kid panthers as well, I think. It got a little crazy.
Yeah, I don't know why they messed with perfection.
Yeah, so in 71, at this version, we were just getting, I think these might have been all reruns at this point, they were just showing the old Pink Panther cartoons that had been made in the 60s. And yeah, they were great. Very fun show. Now let's go to, this is a weird one.
We're back on a boat.
10 o'clock. Get back on the boat, everybody. For a show called Barrier Reef. This is a show that did not stick around into our era, because I certainly never saw this thing. I'm guessing you didn't either.
No, I didn't.
This is an Australian show, live action, about a bunch of like marine biologists out exploring the Great Barrier Reef in Australia.
Now, what I love about this concept, Kevin, is that when you're a kid and you learn about the ocean,
yeah,
barrier reefs are cool. Corals are cool. But then you try to make it into a show with a plot.
It's so strange. How did this happen?
Yeah, it really is.
That they were making this show in Australia and somebody in America thought, yes, let's put this in the Saturday morning lineup among all the cartoons. Suddenly, here's a live-action Australian show about the ocean.
Yeah, they're not wrong about what kids like, but they were a little bit off on how that material was going to be presented.
It's so strange, because it's like a it's like a serious show. It's just like a bunch of serious scientists and dudes out on a ship.
I kept waiting. I watched it. I kept waiting for the fun to happen. The fun never happened.
It's no fun.
And this is coming from a girl who loves Dolphin Cove.
Yeah, one of your favorite shows comes out of Australia.
It real life action.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could not get into Barrier Reef. I'm kind of surprised that this was part of a Saturday morning lineup myself.
I like that something so weird happened, but man, I did not know what to make of this. I did not know that a show like this was ever part of Saturday morning TV.
I would have loved to have heard the pitch for this.
Yeah, but I mean, it's around. You can watch this thing on YouTube if you look it up. That's what we did. We were shocked and confused.
You will be too.
But there you go. Barrier Reef. Let's move on. Oh, now, equally weird, 10:30. This is a full hour of obscure, forgotten live-action TV. At 10:30 was a show called Take a Giant Step.
All right, I don't know what this is, so you're going to have to tell me about it.
Well, this was something else I'd never heard of. It was a show essentially like produced by and starring a bunch of kids. Like these kids would be talking with very little input from adults. They would just let these kids run their own show and have discussions on various like issues of the day.
Huh.
And apparently it was not good. Like I think they could have used a little more adult interference.
Some structure would have been nice.
Yeah. Based on what little information I was able to find. One write-up that I found mentioned, though, that a few months later, a similar concept was done better on PBS with the show Zoom.
Yes.
This was like an early version of something like that, evidently, called Take a Giant Step. And if you're looking for it, don't bother, because according to what I read, it's all gone. It says NBC erased all the tapes of all the episodes just so they could use the tapes again to record other shows. All evidence of the show ever existing has been completely wiped out. And no one shall ever see Take a Giant Step ever again.
Wow.
So let's move on. That was a full hour. That was 10:30 to 11:30. Let's Take a Giant Step. But at 11:30, let's go to the world of Sid and Marty Krofft.
Oh, yes, let's.
This was in reruns at this point because this show was from 1970. The Bugaloos.
Trippy, trippy show.
Oh, you're not kidding. This was the psychedelic era of Sid and Marty Krofft. The first Sid and Marty Krofft shows were H.R. Puff and Stuff, The Bugaloos, and Lidsville. And those were the craziest, most psychedelic of the Sid and Marty Krofft shows, of course.
Those Bugaloos looked like they were having a good time.
This show is so crazy fun. I've got the DVD set. If you ever want to see all of Bugaloos, I can hook you up.
I think I do.
So the Bugaloos, which I don't think we've discussed very much on the Flopcast, strangely.
Yeah, we haven't, because I don't think I've ever seen or heard of this before.
Oh, wow. This was your introduction to Bugaloos. Well,
yes.
Welcome. Look what you've been missing.
I know.
So it's,
thank goodness for the show.
Well, I guess similarly, I'm just putting this together now, but if we roll back to Dr. Doolittle, we had an insect-based rock band with that grasshopper band. Similarly, this is an insect rock band. These are bug people in a band. Although it's not a cartoon, it's live action, and they're bug people.
Yeah, it's live action with some interesting visual effects.
And they're British, of course. So I assume this was Beatles-inspired, you know, because the Beatles,
yeah,
those are bugs. Now we have the Bugaloos, and like the Beatles, they're British, so the Krofts went and hired a quartet of British kids to be a rock band.
They sound good.
Sure. This is our early 70s kind of folk rock sort of music, I guess.
Right. Nothing groundbreaking, but it's fun to listen to.
Absolutely. And the kids are Harmony, Courage, IQ, and Joy. And they're in bug costumes.
I like the antennae.
They looked good. They looked ridiculous.
Right. But their costumes were good looking.
Yeah,
costumes.
But they were good. The girl was adorable. You know, Joy as the butterfly, just super cute. And yeah, it's bugs playing music. And then, of course, you need an enemy. You need a villain on all these crazy old Krofft shows.
Yeah, tell me more about this villain, because it looked like she was pretty seasoned, but I don't know where else I would have seen her.
Yeah, one of the great villains in the world of Sid and Marty Krofft was Benita Bizarre, played by Martha Ray. And yeah, Martha Ray would certainly look familiar because she was a show business veteran who had done tons of TV and theater and stuff. And I knew Martha Ray best from Alice, from the sitcom Alice, you know, set at Mel's Diner. Martha Ray played Mel's mother.
Uh-huh. Okay.
She was a recurring guest star. They'd have her on once or twice a year.
Not every episode.
Yeah, yeah. So Benita Bizarre was just like this crazy old lady who was obsessed with the Bugaloos. Like, she dreamed of being a great singer. The Bugaloos were just trying to be peaceful, you know, hippie bugs and just do their own thing out there in the forest. And then they would constantly be badgered and attacked by Benita Bazaar. And then there was Sparky. There was a little firefly named Sparky who was played by Billy Barty.
I love that.
Yeah. It was only one season.
Aww.
So they made, you know, 17 or 18 episodes or whatever. And certainly of its time.
Yeah.
But absolutely worth a look. They just had a Bugaloos reunion last year online. I watched it.
Really?
Yeah. They got all the Bugaloos actors back together.
That's cute.
It was fantastic. 50 years later, you know? So there's the Bugaloos. And I think the last thing we have on our list is at noon was Mr. Wizard.
Good old Mr. Wizard.
Yeah, who I think we would know from his later years. Mr. Wizard showed up on Nickelodeon like in the 80s.
Yeah, that's certainly where I remember him.
Yeah, because Mr. Wizard goes back to the 60s or maybe even the 50s. He was around forever just doing that show, doing science shows for kids. And this, however, was not reruns at this point. He came back. His show had been off the air for several years at this point. And in 1971, he came back and did this new version for just this one season. I could not find any of this online. I don't know if there's any existing video of the 71 version.
I should hope NBC didn't tape over Mr. Wizard.
It all got erased right along with Take a Giant Step.
No!
But yeah, did you watch Mr. Wizard back in the 80s? I know I did.
Yeah, sure did. Those are all the little science experiments I wanted to be doing at home, but couldn't. So it was cool to see them being done on television.
Those kids definitely had a lot more fun than I ever did in science in school. Did you do anything good in science class in school?
Yes.
Oh, good. Because I feel like I did not.
Yes.
What did you do?
I got to be in an advanced chemistry class, and the fire extinguisher definitely got used more than once in that class. And the goal was to make, what did we set on fire?
All right, so
we set so many things on fire.
So the fun for you was just things going wrong and Cornflake almost burning the school to the ground in a chemical fire. Okay. Well, that's still way better than I had it. You know what I did in science class? And this is like fourth grade, fifth grade.
What did you do?
We had this crazy teacher, and all we ever did, I mean for months, we would set up at our desk like a little plastic ramp. We'd take a sheet of carbon paper, put it down in front of the little ramp. Then we had these little like metal balls, like ball bearings.
Oh, the ball bearings.
We'd roll it down the ramp. It would bounce across the carbon paper. And then we would look at the dots that the ball made on the carbon paper.
That's all you did?
I'm not kidding, Cornflake. We would spend weeks, if not months.
Oh, man. It's like your science teacher was stuck or something.
Every day, science class, that's what we did. I was looking at dots on carbon paper.
Oh, that's not nearly as fun.
And there was very little chance of anything catching on fire. So meanwhile, the kids were having all kinds of fun with Mr. Wizard, rounding out the lineup for 50 years ago on NBC. That's a weird lineup of shows.
It really is.
But there you go. We did it. We've got one more network to look at. That'd be ABC, which hopefully we will get to sometime soon, sometime in the middle of the holidays. We'll take a week off from being festive, and we'll get through the rest of 1971. But for now, hey, Cornflake, get us out of here.
Yes, sir. Well, we got to tell people where to find us on the internet between shows. We're at flopcast.net. We're at facebook.com/flopcast. We're on Twitter. Our handle is @flopcast. And on Instagram, the_flopcast. In case you were wondering where you might leave us a rating or a review, well, I can tell you. You just go on over to Apple Podcasts. That's the place to get that work done. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
And based on what we learned today from the Bugaloos and from Dr. Doolittle, Sponge Awareness Foundation shall be adding several grasshoppers to their lineup. I highly recommend not coming to our next concert. It's going to be stupid. Cornflake, thanks for some cartoon talk today. Thanks for listening, everybody. And meanwhile, you know, be safe, be kind, be silly. And we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Of the myriad pop culture podcasts, there is one that blends in with them all, flying under the radar, nagging at you at a subconscious level. Nerd Bliss, where four hosts from the deep south and anyone they can get to appear for store brand coffee and corn nuts talk about science fiction, pop culture, current affairs, and more. You can find us at nerdblisspodcast.com or on the ESO network. Nerd Bliss. It's one word.
Do you like podcasts?
Then you're gonna hate Thunder Talk.
Tasteless subject matter.
Mature humor.
Contempt for our co-hosts.
Unapologetic social views.
Edgy music.
And total irreverence for the nerd junk we love.
Are all reasons why
no one.
No one.
No one should listen to Thunder Talk.
Find us on the ESO network.
And all podcasting platforms.
Or don't.
Whatever.
Hello, Cornflake Secret After Show. How you doing?
Hi. I'm great. I mean, I may not remember in the morning how I was, but...
you've been keeping it together. You've been relatively coherent all night. I forgot your adult beverage antics tonight. I completely forgot from the beginning of the show.
You have to remember, I worked in broadcast a great many years, and I did a fair amount of drinking on the air as well.
What? Man, there are no secrets on the after show. Hey, you know what's happening next week?
What's happening?
It's Flopcast episode 500. How'd that happen?
I don't know. Didn't we just start recording this show like a week ago?
And you know what we're doing to celebrate?
What are we doing?
I don't know. Maybe nothing.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the T Public store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.